Okay, so good morning. Good afternoon, even. Thank you very much for coming to listen to me. My name is Sarah Deacon. I work for Guidance Software, the makers of NCASE Forensics. Have you all heard of NCASE? Yes? If you haven't, you'll know everything by the end of this. I've flown in this morning from the UK, and I'm working with Media Recovery. So I'm just going to quickly run through for the next half hour how we with NCASE and Media Recovery work with the likes of people like NATO to try and help them in the battle with incident response. So, a really bad day for government. Imagine this. Just close your eyes and imagine this. Washington Metro Station shut down. Seaport computers in New York go dark. Bloggers reveal locations of rail cars and hazardous materials. I can go on and on and on. These are all things that we can think of that would be a very bad day for government. And for quite a lot of people in the world, they think this is all, you know, just something a little bit out there that's never actually likely to happen. Well, unfortunately, we all live in the real world, and we know that this does happen. In reality, military computers are under foreign attack. China denies it's planning cyber war against the West. These are all press articles where computers are being used in a cyber war. And this isn't just the US of A, unfortunately, because if it was, we'd all be, you know, quite happy. Leave them to it. But unfortunately, as you can see, Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia Pacific, and the US of A, and Russia, we're all under possible attack of cyber war. Now, what is cyber war? Cyber war is anything that really can be used in a malicious way from a computing sense. So it could be somebody who is putting malware on our systems, somebody, and, you know, phishing attacks, spam attacks. It could be multiple different things that are going on, denial of service attacks. But it could also be people taking our critical data, people taking our sensitive information, our personal information. Cyber war isn't necessarily just a corporate issue. It's an individual issue. Unfortunately, those of us in this room understand it a bit better than the people in their day-to-day life sitting at home on their computers. But because we understand it a bit better, we can respond to it a bit better. So, can you still hear me? Good. So, what happens when you and your organisation have an incident? Well, as many of you know, the operating system is just that tip of the iceberg. You've got an awful lot that sits underneath that operating system that is vitally important to understand to be able to respond to one or many of these types of incidents. If you can't see it, it's very difficult to defend against it. And you can't stop what you can't find quickly. So you may have many tools within your organisation that are giving you loads of bells and whistles and saying, oh, this is going wrong and that's going wrong and everything's crashing around your ears and you're constantly being inundated by all this information. But what do you then do about it? How do you respond to that incident? Currently, many people have to rely on members of different organisations within their own organisation. How many people here have different departments for IT security, network information, desktop information, enterprise management, all of the different tools within your environment? It's not just one team, is it? And therefore, if something happens, you often have to rely on, well, let's get on the phone and speak to the desktop team and try and find out what's going on that machine. Let's talk to our network guys and find out what's happening in that part of the network. And often, people are out to lunch. Or they might be having a coffee, or they might be a little bit poorly that day and not coming to work. And so it can take an awful lot of time to respond to an incident. And quite often, time is something that you actually don't have a lot of if you want to respond to an incident efficiently, correctly, and make sure it doesn't spread throughout your entire organisation. So, what are the critical requirements for incident response? Well, being able to understand all of your endpoints very quickly. Having visibility of all of the machines in your environment. And I'm not talking about just your Windows PCs. We've got Windows PCs, you've probably got Mac OS, you've got Linux, you've got servers, you know, Sun, AIX, HP UX, you name it. You've probably got a great mixture of these endpoints that could be under attack. If something happens, you need to have visibility of that endpoint and understand quite quickly, were we compromised or were we not? And if you actually think how difficult that is in your standard day-to-day role at the moment, with the manual processes and the reliance on other teams to have that endpoint visibility, the timeline to actually respond to an incident increases incident after incident. And then if you think realistically, how many incidents actually go uninvestigated because there simply is not the time or the resource to investigate them? Well, how do you do it? An awful lot of the information you need to be able to respond to an incident sits in the RAM and the raw disk level. Well, if you're going in through the operating system, there's an awful lot of that information that is very difficult for you to see. You might have an asset management system which will tell you the processes that were on that machine probably about a month ago. That's not very helpful when you're trying to actually truly understand what's happening in your organisation at this moment in time. When something happens, you want to be able to freeze it in that moment in time. What actually is happening at this moment in time on that endpoint machine? My SIM, or my IDS, or my firewall, or my IPS, or whatever the security tools you have in your organization has alerted me that that endpoint or those endpoint systems have been under attack of some sort. You need to quickly be able to see, were they compromised? And be able to take a quick click of the fingers. Let's take a quick snapshot of that system at this moment in time to enable me to analyze it and be able to see whether it was actually compromised. Being able to have a look for known footprints of signatures, known bad. We all sort of, you know, roughly know our known good, but how often do you look at your own system and you'll see a process running there and you think, I'm just going to pop to Google because I've got no idea what that process is doing. And you go to Google and the first probably 10 pages say, oh, this could be spam. Or not spam, this could be some kind of, I don't know, malware or phishing or something not particularly nice, some spyware. And you sit there and then you get down to about the 12th one down and says, oh, no, that's just something to do with your Dell. And I'm like, oh, great, okay. Well, why didn't they name it a little bit nicer so I knew what I was looking for? But being able to have a full list of what's known bad so you can quickly identify those things that have been out there for a while. Viruses, signatures. You hear about a virus comes out. If the antivirus capability was brilliant, there'd be almost no need for the signature version of antiviruses. And unfortunately, it's a very difficult game because as they're writing the signatures to discover the new viruses out there, new viruses are being written. And it's a very difficult process to keep going through and going through, and it can take a lot of time. So being able to quickly see at the click of a fingers, processes that aren't normally allowed in your environment. Not necessarily known bad, but certainly unknown. Being able to quickly identify those and being able to analyse them, again, can help reduce the time it takes to respond to an incident. And being able to search your entire enterprise for this. So, for example, you analyse a machine and you found some processes that perhaps you don't recognise, are not part of your normal criteria. Being able to then say, okay, process ABC.exe possibly could be bad, but I want to know where else this could be in my organisation. Think about currently how you work and how difficult it would be to try and find that exact process running across your entire enterprise. It would be very time consuming and probably take weeks to be able to find out. So that's the idea of being reactive. Proactive. Workstations and servers. being able to have a profile of, well, that's what my workstation should look like, and that's what my server should look like. Because we built it, we gave it to the user, we installed what we wanted to be on that system, so therefore, this is what my gold build is. This is what my system should be. Being able to build a profile and then very quickly be able to establish any adaption from that profile and then be able to analyze it. How much could that reduce the investigative time it takes when you have an incident and you have to respond? Being able to get rid of all the things that you know about and just have those one or two files or processes that are different from the norm. Has anybody in here heard of Bit 9? I'm not expecting a massive arms going up. Have any of you heard of the NIST hash database? No? Does everybody in here know what a hash is? I'm just checking you're awake. That was good. Okay. So, Bit 9 is actually the largest hash database in the world. And it doesn't just hash good. It hashes good, it hashes bad, and it hashes those things in between with a nice little rating between 0 and 100, so it gives you some kind of idea of possible malware or possibly not want that in your organization but not actually doing something bad. They have over 350 million hashes in there. God, I feel sorry for the poor sod that has to enter them in the database every day. But they're adding millions all the time. So therefore, being able to put your systems against that database and quickly find those things that tell you are known bad, again, you think about how much time it takes to investigate an incident, being able to slam your systems against that and be able to get the information back quickly could really help. Company-sensitive data. How many of you in this in the room work for an organisation that you believe might have data that they don't particularly want to leave the organisation? I would suggest most of you should put your hand up to that one. Even if it's just boardroom notes, you know, things that are discussed at the chief executive level, or it could be if you work in a pharmaceutical company, it could be really important research. It could just be your marketing plans for the next 12 months. But everybody has data in their organization that is critical to that organization, and they do not want it to be leaked. But the problem is once you create data these days, it's not like it used to be where you could lock your critical data in a cabinet out of the way. And when somebody wanted to see it, they went to a room, they wrote in a logbook, they went and read it, and they put it back in, and then they left. It's now, unfortunately, electronic. We all know we can get a document, and then we can click Save As, and we've got our own copy of that document. And we can email it to somebody else, and they can save as, and then they've got a copy of the document. And then suddenly, that copy of that document could be anywhere. Because again, you can rename it to make it more interesting to you or make it more relevant to you. Being able to understand where your critical data is within your organization helps you therefore understand how to stop that critical data leaving your organization. And being able to remove that data from places it really shouldn't be, again, can reduce the problem with data theft, data leakage, IP theft, etc. So, why am I standing here talking about all that? Well, Guidance Software with Encase Enterprise is a global organization, and one organization a couple of you in here might have heard of is NATO. Everyone heard of NATO? They're kind of quite big. They're out there helping some wars and other things going on. And you can imagine that they have quite a large estate that they have to look after. In one or two, 51 or so countries. And as you can also imagine, they're probably under possible targeted attack quite often, whether that be people trying to gather information or just trying to put a little bit of nasty software in their system to make it all go belly up. Well, NATO were finding it very difficult to respond to all of the attacks. They had invested in a SIM technology to get all the alerts and find out what's going on. But then the alerts were coming in and they were like, well, what next? We don't have control of all of those systems globally. You know, they could, the different time zones, people might not be there to enable us to be able to see it. So with us working with them, we've enabled them to be able to respond in a global fashion to their incidents. 50,000 node global network enables them to be able to centrally get endpoint visibility and understand what is running on an endpoint system at any moment in time they need to. And also be able to deep dive and understand everything that resides in that hard disk. Now, we're not talking about operating systems, we're talking below the operating system. I'm sure you're all aware in here that when you click delete in your Windows operating system and then you empty your recycle bin, it hasn't actually deleted the data. It's still there in a hard disk. And that's exactly what Encase can do, is to go in and get that information. When you're running your programs, an awful lot of that information is running in RAM. We can go in and we can grab the information running in RAM. You know, things like the executables, the DLLs, the ports, the processes, the network users, the network interfaces, you name it, we can grab it. How easy, not necessarily easy, how much easier would it be to respond to an incident if you have an alert that says, on this IP address, there's a possible attack, being able to then click a button and say, well, you tell me exactly at this moment in time what ports are open on that, whether they're established, are they listening, what processes are using those ports, what DLLs are those processes touching, what network interfaces are available on that system, what users are actually logged onto that system at that moment in time. That might be helpful, I suggest. Ian West, lovely guy, director of NATO's Computer Incident Response Center, says, Encase is enabled to do in seconds what used to take us weeks. I think that's quite a good statement. It's true. So, incident response. It requires both static and volatile data. So you need to understand what's actually residing on the hard disk and what's running in RAM at that moment in time. Having both of these bits of information enable you to be able to have a better picture of exactly what's happening on that endpoint system and therefore be able to make the choices as to how you're going to respond to an incident. So, Encase Enterprise, how does it help? Well, from a central location, you can visualize everything on an endpoint hard disk. So again, if it's been deleted and removed from the recycle bin, as long as it hasn't been overwritten, which, you know, over time these things do happen, we can get that information. We can get information even if the hard disk is encrypted. Because once that machine is live on an environment and the user has logged in, they've decrypted it, and where Encase sits is low enough to therefore be able to read the disk after encryption. International language support, you'd be pleased to hear. We may be an American company, but we've got enough non-American customers that have kicked us enough time and said, did you know there's actually another language out there that's not English? It came as a shock to some of them, but, you know, we're working on it. Being able to, once you've got the information about a hard disk, being able to quickly be able to filter out all the stuff you're not interested in. Be able to run conditions, run filters. Say, I'm only interested in looking at Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PDFs, for example. Again, it depends on what you're investigating. And you might say, oh, but somebody could rename a document as a .dll and then you wouldn't find it. Oh, but yes, we will. We do a signature analysis to check that the extension is of the type of the document. And if it's not, we will therefore change it. We won't change the endpoint, but we'll change it in a searchable field. So then when you run conditions and run filters, it will appear as a document. If you want to just see every single picture that's on an endpoint system, we've got a really cool button called the gallery button. You press the button and every single picture on that endpoint system, even if it's been called a DLL, will appear. So again, depending what you're trying to investigate, it could be inappropriate usage in the workplace. You can therefore quickly be able to see that information, which, without a technology to help you, can you imagine wading through someone's operating system to find that? Well, it depends how much time you've got on your hands and whether you're suffering from something called insomnia, i.e. you can't sleep, it might help you. Be able to view deleted files, as I mentioned before. And everything that you view and bring back to your examiner can be stored in what we call a logical evidence file. And that is court admissible and therefore is forensically sound. It's checksummed, MD5'd hash, and everything else you can possibly think of. So even if somebody goes in and performs a bit swap, we'll be able to detect that that has occurred. Oh, it's written in something. Any programmers in the room? Not that anyone's admitting to it anyway. It is written in something called NScript. So if the features and functions that we give you out of the box aren't enough, you can write your own, because we're nice like that. So volatile memory, this is where people get really excited. The idea that you can very quickly see everything running in RAM. Process hidden? We don't care, we can find it. Rootkit appears like everything else. Because of where we sit running on the system, we see everything. We see what port it's running on. We see whether it's established a connection with anything else. We see what DLLs it's working with. We can see the network card it's working with, any users. And when we grab that information, we also hash it. So being able to slam that against a database of hashes, such as Bit9, or it could be the NIST or something else, you can quickly see processes and ports, etc., that aren't very nice, and perhaps you'll want to, you know, get rid of them. Oh, yeah, get rid of them. It's all very well having the information there. Woohoo, we found all these nasty things and we don't really want them there. Well, by the click of a button, you can what we call remediate. You can get rid of that. You can kill that process. You can wipe it. You can get rid of it. So if you've got to clean up a Trojan or a malware or some kind of horrible attack on your environment, Encase Enterprise will enable you to hash that process, sweep your entire environment, and kill it, and forensically wipe it so it completely removes from the hard disk, which is actually what some of our other customers have used it for. As I mentioned before, this is really good for organizations that aren't necessarily all in one location. Do any of you here work for organizations that have more than one office? I'm guessing so. If something happens, the possibility that you might have had to get in your car, if it's local, get on a plane, if it's not, and go and find out what's going on at those endpoints, time-consuming, costly to the company. If you want a new toy in your department, the fact that you're spending a fortune on travel isn't going to help you. So being able to, from any location, be able to analyze information from offices and locations within your organization enables you to, again, speed up the investigation time. Okay, so we're nearly finished, don't worry. Everyone still awake? Wave your hands in the air, prove it. Thank you. Okay. So, the main benefits, immediate access to remote systems, being able to accurately retrieve information depending on the incident. It could be fraud, it could be malware, it could be personal identifiable information. Being able to remediate security incidents, being able to remove the stuff that you really don't want there on the endpoint. And do that, again, remotely. You don't have to be sat next to the computer. Being able to do what we call a compromise assessment. Well, I found it in one place and it's bad. Let's find out where else it is. So being able to assess your enterprise and understand where it is. And being able to have a positive approach. Isn't it nice to be positive in information security? instead of being seen as the bad guys. Positive approach to audit information technology. So, in conclusion, da-di-da-di-da. Instant response can no longer be met with manual efforts and broken processes. Well, they can if you've got a spare month or two per instant. Every machine really does need to be looked at the lowest level to find out what's actually going on that machine. Many things can hide from traditional tools. I like this one. The best defense to zero-day attacks is a scalable response. It doesn't matter what host intrusion prevention system, firewall, access control, IDS, whatever you've got in place. The people out there writing the stuff against you are 10 times ahead of you in the defense that you have. So that's the whole point about a zero-day attack is, you know, no matter what you put in place, something's going to get through. And unfortunately, one thing we can't guarantee in the IT world, users, they're kind of a burden sometimes when it comes to information security because they just don't get it. If you look at the anti-phishing chap who was just talking before, you know, unfortunately, you can't stop a user pressing a button when they get an email saying, just check your account details. You know, you can't stop things like that. People by nature are curious. So being able to respond when they do these things is critical. So I spoke about NATO, but it's not only NATO that rely on NCASE. You can see many global names. Oh, Microsoft. Isn't that a nice one? You'd have thought they'd be able to understand stuff. They might write the software, but also it's very difficult to be able to see everything. This is a nice one. Just a quick case study. A global computer gaming company had a little bit of a leak of one of their games on the internet that wasn't meant to go out. It was still in beta, and it was leaked, enabling people to download it, burn it, and play it on their games console. Surprisingly enough, the makers of the game console and the makers of the program weren't very happy about this. People were talking about suing here and suing there, and you can imagine it was chaos. So they used NCASE Enterprise to go in and sweep their environment and find out how that information leaked. And they did. And it only took 2 weeks to sweep an entire environment and find out exactly what had happened. And we're talking about, you know, CD writers that had been USB'd into the side of computers and lots of different things, and they managed to find exactly what had happened down to the individual and remediate against the problem. Need to say, he's no longer employed. Well, not at that organisation anyway. But again, they were delighted by this, and we continue to work with them. And another one, as I mentioned before, when it was a virus attack, being able to identify that particular process and being able to sweep an entire enterprise and remove it. I think the quote here says they managed to clean up 5,000 machines within 2 weeks. Within previous issues that they'd had with viruses, it had taken them over 9 months to do a complete clear out. I will leave you just with a few customer quotes to say, they're quite happy, they kind of like it. And I will open it up to questions.
Because I didn't catch it. You told that you can see everything what is going on any computer in the organization. Could you tell it's some kind of tricky software install? So it is a software you install on every computer, or it is as hardware solutions?
Okay, the architecture of how this works. There is something called a servlet. No, it's not an agent. It's a servlet that has to sit on the endpoint machines. Yes, we support the full range. You know, you name it, Nix, we support it. Windows, Mac, etc. It is a servlet, and it sits there quietly, doing nothing, completely dormant, until it's asked to do something. I believe it's only something like 4 files when it's actually installed. It runs on a dedicated port. All communication between that and the examiner is encrypted, 128-bit AES encryption. But yes, it does require an endpoint servlet to be installed. Does that answer your question?
Other questions. So how you can detect some rockets, some virtualization? There was a in the beginning of this conference, there was a blueprint, blue pill project. So how you can find threat like this?
Okay. One of the main reasons we can find pretty much everything running is because of the layer that the servlet runs on. The servlet in itself could be considered a rootkit. And in some organizations, it is considered a rootkit because of the nature of what it does and where it is and where it sits. So it sits very much quite low down on the layers. So that's why we can find everything. Even the servlet itself can be renamed and hidden so that people can't see it on an endpoint system. It doesn't show in Task Manager. It doesn't show anywhere. Again, like a rootkit, and it will find itself. I can't get into the exact technicals because obviously there's a lot of trade secrets as to how it does it. But yeah, it's because of the layer that it sits at. We've yet, my understanding, touch wood, we're yet to have been put in a situation where we haven't found a process.
I have a question.
Yes, absolutely. That's where we're sitting. We're not sitting in the operating system.
Your application isn't on top of an operating system.
We're below the operating system.
So it's your solution is some kind of hypervisor, yes? It's monitoring all operating system activity.
It's monitoring everything. It doesn't monitor as such. It when you ask it to bring back information, it brings back the information when you ask it. So it's not monitoring
as
such.
Yes, but when you work in a broken system, you cannot trust it. So you have to be before operating system calls, functions, mm-hmm. and everything else, yes? Because when you ask some information about file, mm-hmm. and you're working inside operating system, mm-hmm. You can get falsified data because the operating system is
malfunctioning.
Absolutely.
We don't work within the operating system. We work below the operating system.
So and when this it comes including when it palm tops and all devices?
Sorry?
It's also including palm tops, and notebooks, and mobile devices?
We do have something else called Neutrino, which is a plug-in, which works with mobile devices and other devices like that. So it will work with those. For mobile devices and other devices that you're asking, it is an extension to what we do, but we do it. And as part of that, we also supply a Faraday cage to ensure that when we're examining a machine, it's not receiving or transmitting any other data that could falsify.
You told us that this application is slipping most of the time, but what you told us that this application most time is slipping. It's in suspend mode, yes.
Yes.
But it logging everything you're doing in operating system.
No, it's not logging anything.
So when I put some USB pen drive and copy some data, how you can be aware of?
Okay, we won't be aware of it in live. However, when you plug in a USB, lots of registry keys and things like that are written. You have lots of temporary files. You have lots of there's a trace of things that you've actually done. We won't alert you when that happens. We're not a monitoring system. It's more a case of if you think about everything you do as incident response. So when something's happened, you can go and search for something.
A few days later, you are only aware that mm-hmm. someone plug a device and mm-hmm. remove it, but you do not know what was done with this. Okay. I copied some data a few days ago. You have information about some incident, some data leak, but you only have information that some device was connected to computer, but you do not know what I was doing with it.
Correct. There's a limit to what can be done, but... We can, there are lots of trace. I'm not a complete forensic investigator.
But there is some possibility to set up your solution to inform on every such a situation, like plugging a device.
Not, you can't. The solution won't sit there and monitor for every time something happens. It's not a monitoring device at all. It is very much only asked to do something when you're investigating something specific to do it. So if you're looking for an alert or something every time a USB is plugged in or anything like that, that's not what the solution will do. But if that has happened, we will be able to go in and look at registry entries and see, you know, files, whether the file had been there in the past, etc., and be able to look into a full track of events that have occurred.
Okay.
Anybody else? Can you speak loudly? Okay, yeah. Okay, that's a very good question. Thank you. I could have given you that and to ask me. I like it. Okay, the way the architecture works for EnCase is there are three components. There's the examiner, which is the nice fluffy GUI that you use to be able to analyze. There's the servlet that sits on the endpoint system, and then you have something called the safe. And the safe means secure authentication for EnCase. And there are a couple of things that the safe does. First of all, it controls your role-based access control to enable only the correct people with the correct public-private keys, with the correct usernames and passwords, to be able to analyze the machines you want them to analyze. So you've got role-based access control down to a computer and even down to what they can do on that endpoint machine. They require a username, password, and they require their public key of an encryption where the safe has their private key. Oh, sorry, the other way around. They've got their private key, safe got their public key. The other thing is every single installation of EnCase Enterprise is unique in the fact the servlet is configured when the safe is installed. So the servlet and the safe have their own public-private key exchange. So what that means is, we'll use NATO as an example, they have their safe. They have their servlets rolled out, and they have their examiner. I, on my laptop, have an examiner, a safe, but I can't walk into their organization and plug my examiner in and my safe in and access their servlets, because those servlets are tied to that safe. So there are physical access controls as well with the addition of the dongle. I love that word, dongle. So they also have a physical dongle as well that they have to have in their machine to, again, give them access to this. So there are multiple different layers that have to have been gone through on a security side to enable an individual to be able to analyze an endpoint machine. Does that answer your question? Everyone is, you know. That's why we like to come and improve these things, show you it. Everyone sits there and goes, oh, and it's great. Any other questions? Okay, you can, if the safe goes down, yeah. I suggest you have a server down, that's a problem. There is a backup, recovery, all those sort of lovely techniques with public-private keys. You have to contact guidance, and they'll help you through a new process to either recertify a new safe or get that one up and running. Quite often we work with organizations we work with about having a standard safe and then a backup safe. So they've got a backup, but that's completely offline unless a server goes down. And then if they require it, they then have the physical dongle that they go to the other server, put that in, and again, that can get up and running. You can back up the encryption keys and things like that. But even if somebody manages to get hold of those encryption keys, they cannot then go and set up their own safe because they have to have guidance involved with a few other parameters to make sure that the recertification process is correct for the correct organization and everything else. Okay? As in for which component? Okay, so for the servlet, it runs on everything pretty much, but we're predominantly Windows.
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I have to stop you right now
because
we're running out of time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.